Hello, everybody, and welcome to a fresh edition of the Not Another Bucking Podcast, a post-NFL draft edition of the pod. I'm Nick Kosmider, your host and Broncos beat writer at The Athletic. And I just spent three long days at the Broncos team facility in suburban Denver, where they really did a number on the roster over the last, the past weekend. Drafted seven players, including a new quarterback, potential starting quarterback in Bo Nix. They also swung a trade on Saturday for John Franklin Myers, a defensive end who will step immediately into a starting role. And Denver hopes provide some real inside-out versatility, a guy who can push the pocket, but is also another piece of this puzzle this offseason, which the Broncos have put a lot of emphasis on being much better against the run. We're going to get into it. Producer Kaz will chime in here at various points, but let's just go through real quick the guys that the Broncos drafted. Again, it was a seven-man class, started out slow. They had the number 12 pick in the draft, and after months of speculation, so much of which we've talked about now, the various machinations of whether they would draft a quarterback, how they would get him, whether they needed to move up, whether they could stay where they're at, who it would be, you know, can you still move back and get a quarterback? All of those things had been sort of, you know, talked about from every angle. And, you know, it turns out that what they did was draft a guy who a lot of people had connected with Denver from the very start of this process, given the familiarity in and just sort of football blueprint, football fingerprints that Bo Nix has with Sean Payton, the similar kind of, desire for, the way that they go about learning the game, the protections, the checks at the line of scrimmage that Nix took a lot of ownership of once he went to Oregon, talked a lot about, the processing speed and how you go about creating that within the parameters of a certain scheme. There was just a lot to like. And then as the Broncos started getting more into the process, there were some things that stood out to them, starting from a basic level that Sean Payton, met Bo Nix and came to realize that he's a lot bigger than he thought he was when he watched him on TV. That was something that was, an attractive quality in a quarterback to have. And they just continued to kind of slowly go through that process. But there was various points where it pointed them towards saying, this is the guy. This is the guy for us. Now, again, he probably wasn't the top quarterback on their board. I think Caleb Williams, certainly Jaden Daniels. But they've known for a long time in this process that those guys weren't going to be gettable, that the idea of trading what it would cost to get up there and get one of them, it just wasn't palatable. Not only because of all that the Broncos have given up in the past couple of years during trades for Russell Wilson and Sean Payton himself, but because of the fact that those trades have created such significant holes or just room for players on the roster that can impact it. Giving more of those chances away, it just didn't align with where Denver was at. So, in a historic draft where six quarterbacks go off the board in the first 12 picks has never happened before. Broncos get the sixth one, but might've been a guy that was probably third on their list. So in that sense, it worked out. From there, long wait, no second round pick. At number 76, they draft Jonah Ellis, kind of a rising young pass rusher out of Utah. Got dinged a little bit because he had a shoulder injury that kept him out of the combine, kept him out of the last three games of his season at Utah, but 12 sacks in 10 games last year, All-American, is a guy with a pedigree in the NFL. He has three brothers in the NFL. His dad played one of his 10 NFL seasons for the Broncos. So a guy that they know what they're getting with Jonah Ellis. Day three was where the action started. The Broncos traded up from the very start of the fourth round, went up and got Troy Franklin, right? The top target for Bo Nix at Oregon last year. And, what a way to, kind of help a rookie quarterback that's going to come play for you by, getting a receiver where he knows where he's going to be on the field at all times. Sean Payton sort of downplayed that connection, right? Calling it more of a coincidence and, allowed for the fact that they did have more exposure to Franklin because of how hard they were studying Bo Nix. But, again, I don't think you can discount, what that is, especially when you consider that, Bo Nix also has a center on the roster and Alex Forsythe, who was his center his first year at Oregon and now has a chance to battle for the starting job now that Lloyd Cushenberry is gone. But either way, I think even outside of Nix, Franklin is a player that the Broncos had a second round grade, I believe, on, and it was there available at the top of the fourth round. They go up, they get him. give up a fifth round pick in the process and a sixth round pick while getting a seventh round pick back. So a bit of a price to pay, but you get a kind of an electric playmaker. It was something we talked about a lot. This offense needs you kind of an aging receiver room needed a guy like that. And again, the fact that he knows kind of where his quarterback's going to be putting the ball is a good start. The wait for the Broncos from there was middle of the fifth round, where they kind of had two picks within three selections. Quarterback Chris Abrams-Drain out of Missouri, a guy that gets his hands on a lot of footballs during the course of his career, deflects a lot of passes, and is really a really competitive guy that could probably play outside, but might have more of a future with Denver at the nickel spot. A place that right now Jaquan McMillan filled really well last year, but you always need depth. And then one of the more intriguing picks for me after that was Audric Estime, the Notre Dame running back who had 1,341 yards last year and 18 touchdowns. Huge guy, 5'11", 220, but doesn't run, runs a lot more fleet footed than that kind of size would suggest. He's going to be, I think, for them, more of a battering ram type player in the goal line. It's something that they've really needed. They really missed, just did not materialize for them last year. But I think he could be a really solid first and second down back for this team. And it certainly puts Javonte Williams, again, entering the last year of his contract, on a little bit of notice. The Broncos closed out the draft with two seventh round picks, Devon Vele from Utah, a 26 year old player, one of the older rookies you'll see. Might be the last Broncos draft pick, as my friend Andrew Mason said, to be born in the 20th century in 1997. Most of these guys now have the 2000 something on their birth date. So unique situation there. He went on a religious mission right after high school and then went to Utah. But yeah, 6'4", 200 pounds, kind of a 220, big bodied guy. The Broncos said that they kind of envision him as that big slot guy, similar to Tim Patrick, another guy from Utah who joined the Broncos several years back after going undrafted. And then they closed out with I'm going to mispronounce his name, even though he told us in the draft, because that's just, that's my head has been spinning. It's just sort of the way that it went. But again, he played center and guard at South Carolina last year, transferred in from Yale, where he was an economics and political science major. So a guy, obviously, 12 times smarter than I am, or that anybody else probably in that locker room is. And it kind of fits the mold of the kind of players that they have tended to bring in there. Nick Gargiulo, I apologize. So that rounded it out. But of course, you add to the fact that they traded for John Franklin Myers. Again, I think that was one of the huge spots that they still needed, was that defensive end spot, opposite Zach Allen. Now you have Franklin Myers, DJ Jones, Zach Allen. You've got Malcolm Roach that you're going to be able to rotate in there as well. I think they've done a number on that defensive line. So I'll just kind of transition from here as I say kind of my biggest takeaway, and that is just how much this roster has changed in the time that Sean Payton has gotten here. I was counting it, Matt, and I think there could be upwards of 15 starters in week one this year, when you account for special teams, that were not even on this roster at the end of the 2022 season. That is a pretty significantly quick turnaround in terms of moving on from a lot of players who were kind of pre Sean Payton acquisitions, and then bringing in a lot of new players in a really quick amount of time. And so, again, the way that he's doing this, it was going to very much be his own way of building Sean Payton. It was going to have a different look to it. It was going to be done, in conjunction with a lot of how he's viewed the right way to build a football team from the inside out. And so to me, it's maybe no surprise that it's happened like this, but when you just talk about the number of differences that they're going to have when this season starts versus, again, just two seasons ago, it's pretty significant. What about you, Matt? What was your biggest takeaway as you looked at Denver's haul?
I mean, there's a lot to take away from it, especially day three. A lot of really interesting picks moving up to start the day. Sean Payton kind of mentioned that Troy Franklin was a guy that he was like, hey, let's go get him. That's a guy that, they had that second round grade on. That's a big one. that's going to be, you know, that's certainly a pick that you're interested in. But Nick, this draft class is just going to come down to, like, when you look back at this draft class, it's going to be, was Bo Nix successful as the 12th overall pick? Because, I mean, you look at it, the Jets are on the clock at number 10, and the Vikings give up picks to move up one place, which means that the Vikings thought that the Broncos or the Raiders were going to come up to pick a guy for them. And, you know, Sean Payton implied that was, you know,
subterfuge on his part.
Subterfuge. I don't know that I would give Payton the complete belief or trust on that one. I wouldn't have been surprised if the Broncos were willing to move up regardless of whether it was for Bo Nix or, because, you know, that they, you know, they talked about maybe moving down and still having Bo Nix, but decided, you know what, hey, Bo Nix is our guy. We don't want to have the next guy in round 2-3 and not have even, you know, what that is. So they stayed there. Good news is they didn't have to give up draft capital to get Bo Nix. But ultimately, he's a guy that a lot of people have projected going a little bit later in the round. But like, it's not going to matter. It's not going to matter if you picked Bo Nix at number 12, if you picked Bo Nix at 26. If Bo Nix is successful in the NFL, that's a great pick. If Bo Nix is not successful, you're starting over again. You just lost your first round pick when you needed an infusion of talent on the roster. So, you know, obviously it's way too early for us to tell. He joins now a somewhat crowded, interesting quarterback room going into camp. There's a very good chance Bo Nix starts week one, but he probably comes into training camp as like your QB3, throwing more on the roster the rookie squad and that kind of thing in training camp, and then has the chance to earn a job. But it's suddenly a very interesting quarterback room to look. I was thinking, like, I'm trying to remember back, when was the last time that there was like a legitimate three-headed quarterback chase going in, like, for a starting quarterback job going into the NFL?
Yeah, it's been a while, and I don't necessarily know that this is what that is. I don't really see a scenario in which they are walking into this year and saying, hey, Zach Wilson, you're going to come in here and battle for this starting job. I mean, the way that Zach Wilson has quarterbacked the last, I mean, really all 3 years in New York, but even when you're looking at year three, where you're saying, okay, hey, you've been in the league now for a couple of years, you know sort of what to expect from defenses. Now, granted, he has had to deal with a lot there in terms of the changing of coordinators, you know, the fact that you've got Aaron Rodgers and kind of all his extracurricular stuff that just hovers over that room. And then, you know, basically coming in there being a guy who was going to really help Zach Wilson along. Then once he got hurt, kind of more or less ghosted him. There was a lot that he was dealing with. So I'm not going to put all of that on him, but the fact of the matter is the guy's numbers do not suggest that you should be putting him in a starting quarterback position right now. Sean Payton, I thought it was interesting, said, you know, the way that you kind of begin with him, you know, at a guy that's probably had some shaken confidence, he says, listen, we're going to start the huddle. We're going to start with getting into the huddle, getting the cadence out. And that the way that he kind of, I think, illustrated within that was saying, like, we're going to start from ground zero. We're going to build it up the way that we want to, and we'll see where it's at. Again, nothing's impossible. Like, that he, you know, maybe again, he just needed to get the heck out of New York and free from that. He can, you know, the talent that made him the number two pick just all of a sudden coalesces. It's just historically would be almost unprecedented to think that that's going to happen. So I don't really view that. It is going to be interesting to your point of like how they construct this thing. Like, do you go in and say, look, this is open. We're having a competition in which everybody's going to get equal reps. You know, again, I think that would be more between Stidham and Nix. But again, I just think that there's not a rush with Nix in terms of like needing to be the week one starter. I think he needs to play this year. I think that is that's without a doubt. Whether that's, you know, four or five games in, you know, I think you draft a guy that's already 24 years old and, you know, has played 61 college games. And the kind of the upshot on him was he's supposed to be one of the more quarterback ready, even if he doesn't have the same or NFL ready, even if he doesn't have the same ceiling as Caleb Williams or Jaden Daniels, the first two picks in this draft. But I think ultimately you still, you want to be able to transition that onto the field to see how ready he really is. But it doesn't have to be week one. So they'll just have to kind of see. The other part of it is like the guy behind him doesn't have much more experience, right? If you look at that, Bo Nix is if you just combine all these quarterbacks, NFL and college starts together, Bo Nix has more starts than anyone. And I get that NFL starts are different, of course, but I'm just saying, like, you know, again, Jarrett Stidham's a guy who's been a career backup, has started just, you know, two games in each of the last 2 years that were, you know, end of season types games, never been a guy that's been considered, you know, a possible starter to begin an NFL season. So, you know, he's got plenty to prove as well. And that's why I think it is interesting. It's going to probably be pretty open, but, you know, Sean Payton to this point didn't give a lot of insight into like how they will structure it. So, I think that's interesting. The other part of it, Matt, is that, you know, Sean Payton was talking about what you need for a rookie quarterback, not just Bo Nix, but the things that will help a guy like that come in and succeed. I think obviously the coaching, the environment that you're in is a huge part of that. And there where I think Bo Nix and Sean Payton being on the same page, you know, philosophically about football and the way that they study it and what they try to do, I think is going to work well. Not to say there's not going to be bumps in that relationship, that Bo Nix is not going to have to take really hard coaching, because he is. But then you look at Davis Webb, I think, who was instrumental in the process too of them identifying Nix and helping explain how he, as the quarterback's coach, one of the rising young coaches in this league, would be able to help him along. I think the coaching setup there, the fact that Sean Payton and Joe Lombardi have been together for so long coordinating offenses, I just think there's a lot of good offensive infrastructure that will help him. And then the other part is, okay, can you have a strong running game for this quarterback? I think the Broncos underachieved in terms of being a running offense last year. And that's why I thought the Estime pick was really interesting in the fifth round. I think that's a good spot to get value on a running back. But it also is a reminder that Javonte Williams, Samaje Perine, both going into last year's their contract. Javonte Williams had a really tough second half of last year. And we know that he was coming off the major knee injury in his second season there in 2022, you know, potentially came back a little bit too early because he definitely hit a wall there in the second half of last year. You know, the hope is now further removed from the injury with this offseason, he'll be refreshed and kind of back to that guy that we saw as a rookie. But there's never guarantees when you have an injury like he did that you are going to be able to get back to that same form, you know, especially as a running back. It's a tough projection. Thing about Estime is he got to Notre Dame in 2021 when he was 17 years old, didn't play a lot as a freshman. So he really only has two college seasons worth of, like, you know, heavy wear on his legs. He's still just 21 years old. In fact, he might be 20 years old. I have to go back and check that and maybe turning 21 during the season. So really a young back, a guy that I think is probably just starting to ascend in terms of his overall ability and what he could bring to the field. So, and then the other thing was the defense, right? If you're not able to stop the run defensively, you're not slowing teams down. You're forcing your rookie quarterback to throw a lot to beat teams because you're behind in games. Last year, Denver didn't stop the run, and when they weren't creating turnovers, that gave them really no chance to set up a proper game plan, because even in games like the Minnesota win, right? Like, they were getting gashed on the ground. It just so happened that they were falling into a lot of turnovers. Again, you get credit for forcing those, but we always knew that faucet was going to turn off at some point. And when it did, Denver could not stop the run effectively enough, to stay in games. I think that the moves that they have made defensively in the front seven have shown you how much of a priority that they viewed that as. Like, Malcolm Roach is an interior run stuffer. That's what he does. Franklin Myers, a little bit more versatile, you know, but super high motor, is going to kind of play where they ask him to play and really give the effort that I think is going to make them just mentality wise, be a better team against the run. And then the other interesting part is the pass rush, right? You have these three young pass rushers who did some good things last year: Nick Benito, Jonathan Cooper, Baron Browning. You know, Browning, Cooper going into the last years of their deals. So there was certainly need for some more young depth going forward. And Ellis, again, they expect him to be fully healthy by the time training camp rolls around after having that shoulder surgery to fix a torn labrum. You know, how quickly can he work his way into that mix? Probably right now, just a good sub package guy that can come in. on some passing downs and rotate in and stuff like that. So it's interesting to me, Matt. I think that you can, the Broncos are still a ways away. Like, I don't think you came out of this draft saying, oh my gosh, all of a sudden they have a chance to really compete in the AFC West. Like, that's, I don't think that's what happened, but I think what has materialized over the last month or so with some of the trades that they've made, and then certainly the draft, is that you can see what the vision is now. I think it's starting to become pretty clear of how they're trying to build this thing and where exactly that they're committing their resources. You know, one of the things that Sean Payton talked about is, you know, going into this draft, looking at it and analyzing the fact that they thought it was pretty thin at defensive tackle, these kind of interior players that they really needed to achieve this goal of being better against the run. So they went out and committed what resource they did have financially after the Russell Wilson dead money on the interior of that defensive line. That was really kind of where they focused and then kind of drafted around that. And so I just think you've seen this, you know, pretty sound process that has unfolded in terms of how they want to build this thing.
Absolutely. And that continues on, even obviously the 7 draft picks, but also the slew of undrafted free agents that come in immediately after the draft. There's often 1, 2, maybe 3 guys that can kind of make a team coming from there. And there's a couple of this year that I think are kind of interesting, kind of piggybacking on the Estime pick. The Broncos added Memphis running back Blake Watson, who kind of is more of that like scat back, more, you know, good in the passing game, a little bit quicker, kind of fills that same kind of role that Jaleel McLaughlin was filling last year. He's a guy that I think could, he's a, you know, 4.4 speed, 40 kind of guy, really fast back that could potentially make up the second head of a two-headed running back situation there in years to come. So I think he's another guy. Running back's a position where that undrafted or like that late round pick really does get that good value. So I think that was one of the undrafted free agents that was really interesting. The other is another Memphis player who was the guy that they ended up coming or giving a decent signing bonus to, is Jordan Miller, kind of filling that gap or that interior defensive line role that you were looking at. He's another guy that I think is kind of an interesting prospect to be able to get on as an undrafted free agent, kind of come in on a budget, kind of fill that rotational role early on. Both of those guys are pretty interesting. I'm sorry, Jaylen Allen. I think I said Jordan Miller, Jaylen Allen. It was Jaylen Allen though, that I was thinking of from Memphis, who I think is another guy who could potentially have a shot at making this team, especially as a team that needs that interior defensive line depth, we would say. Any other of the undrafted free agents that kind of stood out to you as like interesting guys that you know, you were interested or happy to see them pick up?
Well, I'd be lying if I said I have dug into these guys a whole lot yet, just in terms of like kind of going through everything else. But I would agree with your assessment with Watson. Obviously last year, undrafted free agent Jaleel McLaughlin made the team and became, you know, an impact guy at over 500 total yards, I believe 4 touchdowns. You know, really started to come on. You know, it's always interesting when you add kind of when you look at the position like tight end, where that was the one group that you said going into the draft, they need to get somebody here. They had the least receiving production of any team in the league at the tight end spot last year. A lot of that due to the fact that the guy that they've really marked as the big pass catching threat, Greg Dulcich, has been unable to stay healthy at all. And you know, again, hoping that he's going to be on the field is more of this would accentuate us if he is, versus like, this is our plan with him, or at least I feel like that's how it should be viewed, because until you have a guy that's consistently had those injuries show you that he is going to be on the field, like it's a difficult thing to plan on. So there was a couple tight ends, Dylan Leonard of Georgia Tech that they brought in, Thomas Yasmin, another Utah guy, tight end that they brought in.
Yasmin's one that I don't necessarily think that he has a great shot at making this team, but the highlight of him, all right, it was the Pac-12 championship last year where he catches a pass on the run and just bowls over the USC quarterback and takes it 60 yards for the go-ahead touchdown and like near the end of the game. And I was just like, that's a man who you like to see, you know, you wouldn't mind seeing catch a pass. I don't know if he's got the requisite skill required to play at the NFL level, but that highlight is like, yeah. I was watching a thing pre-draft about him actually. And he's like, know, I have never been that pumped up after a play. He's like, I bowled him over. I scored the touchdown. I was excited. And then I went to the sideline and I threw up.
That's great.
I'm like, all right, man.
Yeah. I just pulled that up now that you bring that up. And I that did jar that memory of that play, you know, Rising, the quarterback for Utah's, rolls out to his left. Yasmin started in line and then went out for the slant to the outside, breaks one tackle as he catches it. And then, yeah, he just absolutely puts the safety, you know, on the dirt basically as he gets into the end zone, seals that game to beat USC in the Pac-12 championship. So again, it's interesting. He would be the third Utah guy, you know, that they brought in here. And it's interesting to see how that happens when you're going over and you're looking at certain guys, and then other guys tend to pop up on that same film that make you go, okay, we'll take a look at this. The other thing would be that they brought in a couple local guys. Alec Mock is an Air Force linebacker. Frank Crum, who a lot of people were telling me that they thought that he could be a kind of a late round developmental offensive tackle. He's like 6'8", 315 pounds. You know, in the Broncos, they had a couple guys that are that were undrafted offensive tackles last year. Alex Balchewski from Illinois was one really that ended up making that roster as an undrafted offensive tackle. So again, certainly that is an opportunity perhaps for Crum to do the same thing. This draft wise, I think what you're seeing with NIL is keeping a lot of guys in school longer. This draft had fewer underclassmen than any in, I'm not sure what the year was, but they said maybe a decade in terms of, you know, guys that came out that left eligibility on the table to come into the league, different setup. So, you know, again, I you're not necessarily going to have the same level of talent in the back end of the draft. And, you know, maybe even that is the case with some of these undrafted guys, but again, you know, all you need is a shot. The Broncos have always been a team that has, you know, really taken a hard look at undrafted free agents. And of course, last year, again, Jaleel McLaughlin, Palchewski was in there. Nate Atkins, the tight end, also making the roster. And then Thomas Incoom, the edge rusher. All four of those guys were on the 53-man at cutdown day. Palchewski ended up going on IR, where he spent most of the season. But again, the opportunity certainly is there for these guys. You know, so that really, I think, again, we could dive into little nooks and crannies of everything. But I think what you take away now, Matt, is you're right. This is going to be about how Bo Nix performs. But well before he gets on the field, it's going to be about how they set up this system for him, how they make sure that they're kind of taking his development along the right way. Sean Payton, you know, kind of well documented, right? Hasn't leaned on a rookie quarterback at any point in his career as a head coach. This will be a first. So, you know, again, how do they go through that process? How do they get him up to speed? Those things are all going to be really interesting to see. We will get to be out there, I think, just for a day, but about 12 days from now is when the Broncos will host their rookie mini camp, and that will be the first chance to lay eyes on Nix, kind of in a Broncos practice uniform throwing passes. So looking forward to that. That'll be kind of an early preview. Any final takeaways, Matt?
I think mostly Nick is a sense of relief. I think had the Broncos not come out of this draft with a quarterback that could potentially be the answer, had they not come out with with the edge rusher, some of the weapons that we saw them come out of, you would have almost felt like this season had already been called. We were already done with the season. There wasn't a shot. This doesn't, like you said, this doesn't leave them like, oh, they're going to be contending now with the Chiefs, most likely. But I mean, every year there's teams that overperform based on expectations. Every year there's that team, there's that Houston Texans team where you're like, wow, they turned that around real quick. So not saying that that is, you know, where we're expecting things to be, but there's at least a sense of hope, a sense of, you know, maybe the next year, maybe next couple of years, as the Sean Payton train really starts rolling, we start to see guys in his system for several years who fit his scheme. You know, maybe things are starting to look up a little bit compared to where we were a few days pre-draft, where we were kind of sitting here shaking our heads like, what the heck? Where are we going with this?
Yeah, it makes this season far more intriguing Absolutely. Like when you have a rookie quarterback, one that's drafted in the top half of the first round, even though he was QB6, it creates automatic intrigue. Everything that he does, everything the franchise does around him, to expedite his development. It's all fascinating. It's all interesting. It's all going to be part of the historical record of the Sean Payton era, with the Denver Broncos. So I agree with you. It'll make the season and sort of what we get to watch, a lot more interesting. And to your point about like there being a team that overperforms, you're right. I view them maybe as more of that, like, Tampa Bay Buccaneers type team from a year ago that had like, you know, had a mix of veteran talent. They had slowly started to infuse some of the younger guys, had really hit well on some of their draft picks. And, again, took advantage of a really bad division. Let's be honest about that. The NFC South, the Broncos don't have that luxury at all. So again, anything they're fighting for would be a wild card spot. But I think you can see if you're going to say, okay, the Broncos might get pegged to win 5.5, 6.5 games or whatever it might be by the odds makers. Okay, well then what are the scenarios in which they get past that, or that they could even get, 9 wins, get themselves in the playoffs. I think it comes down to these additions that they have made to this front seven, and sort of whatever schematic adjustments that they make in the offseason to start to plan for things, those really taking a foothold and making Denver a lot more capable in that regard. And then some of these young pass rushers as they get to be in more third and long, more true passing situations, can really kind of let some of their talent unfold. That this group now that you can rotate in of pass rushers starts to be able to have some more advantageous situations. So that's one thing. And then of course the other end is, like we talked about, some of these things that they've done, trying to beef up the run game, that you don't really lose a lot after losing Lloyd Cushenberry with whoever steps into that role. And then a guy like Estime comes in and just gives you a different element. And then of course, yeah, if Nix is in, that he has, again, the sort of glass half full that a lot of people have talked about, is he's basically a veteran stepping in as a rookie, given just how much football he's played and in different kinds of environments, that he'll get in there and be able to just, nothing's going to ever go seamless for a rookie in the NFL, but that he can be a guy that maybe gets to bypass some of the growing pains because of what he has in place, both from a schematic standpoint and just his own personal experience on how to handle stuff. That is sort of, if you're trying to say, okay, well, how does this overachieve? It's those things. The Broncos just continuing to be better in those tight game situations, learning from some of the stuff that they continue to be a dynamite on special teams, a team that really benefits from the new kickoff rules and continues to kind of find those hidden yards, as it were, in that aspect of the game. That's where you start to say, huh, if you squint a little, you can kind of start to see why they might be competitive. But again, I don't think this is a playoff team at the end of the day. But you can see where it's going in 2025. They will have a lot of cap space to work with as they enter free agency. They will have kind of a full complement, or close to a full complement, of their picks, including, I think, they'll own all their picks in the first through fourth rounds. So again, it's a team that is going to have a lot more at its disposal in terms of acquiring young players and veteran players at key spots, than they have the last few years. And you add all that into the fact that, hey, next year, Sean Payton will be going into his third year. They'll finally have some continuity that has been elusive for this team for quite a while. Those are where you start to say optimistically, this is where they get the train rolling. It's not awesome that they're going to have Patrick Mahomes in their division as they try to do this. But hey, that's the reality that they live in. And I think overall this weekend, this last kind of few weeks of what they've done, it's been a good launching point for what they're going into. But of course it all has to connect together. Well, anyway, we thank you guys all for listening. Really glad that you came in, checked out our post-draft episode. We'll be back in a week or so, kind of breaking down some of the things to look forward to as this team rolls into rookie minicamp and then the rest of the offseason. So until then, thanks for stopping by.